Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, May 31st, 2019. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, from the Uber blog Hullabaloo, Heather Parton, or Digby, will be joining us to look back on the week that was and look forward to the weeks that sadly will be. Also on the program today, I think, Judy Gold will be joining us to provide for us a primal scream of sorts as we deal with the daily nightmare that is this this political era. Also on the program today, I think we're going to have a call-in to Michael Brooks at his silent retreat. Yes, very likely happening. And Donald Trump announces he will institute a 5% tariff on Mexico until they do something. And if they don't do it, he's going to increase it 5% by every month up to a maximum of 25%. Of every one of the products that makes up 14% of our imports as it enters into this country. Meanwhile, hundreds of immigrant minors are being held beyond their legal limits at our border. More than a dozen online charter schools shut down in California facing criminal indictments. Speaking of criminal, Fisher-Price sold deadly baby sleepers for years without ever having tested their safety.
Of course they did.
Yep. Well, all those babies can just decide to get a sleeper at a different place, according to our market principles.
How do you say caveat emptor in baby talk?
Right. North Korean envoy reportedly executed over the Trump-Kim summit. And that feeling when your global editor-in-chief turns out to be not so global. Nevada governor vetoes national popular voter vote bill. Why, I don't know. And some bipartisanship you'll like. And lastly, some very good news. New Hampshire kills its death penalty. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. It is the end of a rather long week. Long, short week. And... glad you could join us. We're anticipating a lot of fun today. There's been a bit of a meltdown on the right wing right now.
Meltdown May.
It's Meltdown May. And I like to think that I play a little part of it. You know, I think there are sometimes moments probably where I certainly dedicate too much time to this, but then again, you know, I've been doing this now for 15 years and have been and becoming, you know, more and more clear with where I have influence and where I do not have influence. And not so great with necessarily exerting a proportionate amount of effort based upon what I know will be the return in these things. But with that said, I do think it is important for one to be able to assess one's skills without ego. Maybe they're not always where you want them to be, but if God made your hand into a hammer, then you should be banging nails. If it's a saw, you can't feel bad that it's not a hammer, and you got to saw things.
There's no romance to being proportionate about everything.
Right. Well, there's no romance to that, but it's also like, you know, sometimes you have to look yourself in the mirror and say, like, you know, look, I'm not going to, I'm not Noam Chomsky. I'm not Howard Zinn. But I'm pretty good at driving some people crazy on Twitter.
And you know what? You do look like Noam Chomsky when he was your age. So.
Well, that may be enough. But the point is that, you know, my skill set is what it is. And so sometimes I feel like, well, if not me, then whom? You know, back in the day, I used to get into some pretty good Twitter fights with Breitbart. And I always felt like I got under his skin quite a bit. And I thought that was healthy for me to do. I think it was healthy for the world. I'm not going to take responsibility for his heart giving out on a walk, but... And like I say, you know, I don't, I don't say I don't wish ill on people. I do wish ill on some people, but it's not a function of like, you know, Andrew Breitbart might have been a very nice dad and a very nice husband, very nice friend to people. And, I don't blame them mourning his loss, but, I only knew him through his public work, which I thought was extremely detrimental. In fact, I would say we're still feeling a lot of that detrimental impact. Things like the destruction of Acorn, for instance. And other things. But and so, you know, to the extent that I can be a cog in a wheel that in any way inhibits another wheel, I'm happy to do that. And so with all that said, let's talk about Steven Crowder, who, as you know, and I have said this before, I have not ever released any evidence of this. I am quite confident about the evidence that I have. I believe it's sitting in Matt's computer. New York is what is known as a one-party state. And in one-party states, you are allowed to record a conversation as long as one of the parties on the line is aware of it. I mention this because originally when I accepted the invitation to go to Politicon, I had conversations with people associated with that event wherein I was supposed to have a debate with Steven Crowder. And then at one point, I was told, and this is a quote, he got cold feet. And then there was other information that was provided to me that I thought was pretty funny. About like who his management is, but that's not important. But Steven Crowder has what, like a millions of followers on YouTube?
Might be a couple.
I mean, he has a massive show. He has a beautiful studio. He makes, I would imagine, a considerable amount of money.
3.8 million subscribers.
Yes. I mean, that's pretty stunning. That's pretty stunning.
That's so bad.
The Young Turks have a business model. I think they have 2 million subscribers, right? Or maybe they have 5. I don't know. Somewhere around there. But nevertheless, they have a huge enterprise. He has 4 or 5 guys in a room. And so he's doing quite well for himself. And much of his appeal to his audience, I imagine if we looked at the demographics of the audience, they'd be quite young. young enough that they never occur to them to say, like, hey, how come when you're going out to always to debate politics, you're always doing it with freshmen in college as opposed to like adults who might have had more time to think about these things? His audience doesn't seem to care. And so I wanted to debate Crowder, and he wouldn't do it. And much of his shtick is basically what you would see if you were in junior high, I think. Maybe even like sixth or seventh grade, middle school. And he does it unabashedly, and I do mean bashedly, on his thing. It's, you know, what was it? Che Guevara's a fag. And this and that.
Socialism now, is for fags.
Socialism is for fags.
High now, level listen, ideas.
Here's the thing. When we do Ken, Ken, and Ken, when Mike and I do that parody show, we talk like that because we're parroting and we're being ironic. I mean, some people could say like, well, you still shouldn't say that because it's, you know, whatever. I mean, I think there's an argument to that, but whatever. There's no irony in what he's doing. He is literally calling people gay and fags and making these jokes with the premise is that it's, you know, like gross and funny or stupid or what. I don't know.
Unchristian.
What. It's almost like an unchristian. It's almost like I feel like at one point in my life, I understood the concept of this joke. Maybe I'm just too old or maybe the times have changed or something like this. But like,
no, Sam, some people are gay and that's funny.
I watch this and I can't, it's hard for me to wrap my brain around a grown man doing this stuff on a daily basis. Like, you got to come in, you got to do it. And so this compilation came out from a tweet thread from that guy who does explainers on Vox. I can't remember his name.
Carlos Maza.
And apparently, which I didn't know, Crowder rides Carlos Maza in the same way that we ride like, Crowder or like Dave Rubin or these guys, except for I don't go like, I don't know what the, well, I don't make fun of the fact that Dave Rubin's gay.
Yeah.
It just doesn't even occur to me. Crowder, I don't make fun of the fact that he is, I don't know, all white. I mean, I'm white. I don't know. But Carlos Maza basically details in this Twitter thread that, and he doesn't blame Crowder. Good for him. Because Crowder's just doing what Crowder does. But Crowder has challenged Maza to a debate, but the premise of it is that he's so gay, he's going to lose the debate. Or something to that effect. And apparently, when they go after Maza, it's not just debate Steven Crowder, like my understanding is that people sometimes do to Dave Rubin with my name.
Right.
They doxed him and give him death threats on his cell phone. And it's creepy. It's creepy. But here is the compilation of Steven Crowder. And so he blames YouTube basically for not policing this in some way. But here's Steven Crowder, a compilation, and it is almost impossible to understand how a grown man could act like this. A grown human being. But here he is.
Before we get to the video, with our favorite favorite lispy Sprite from Vox. It's ridiculous. It's bonkers. You're being given a free pass as a crappy writer because you're gay.
That center line on his little queer graph there. What is
well,
that
now
line?
The graph is queer?
It's violence, filth.
Okay, so the little queer can eat his chips all nonchalantly. It's code for rape, Mr. Queer eating chips on the Vox channel.
Mm-hmm, chip, 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 but you can eat just one. Like dicks.
This is what Mr. Gay Vox wants to do. Mr. Lispy Queer from Vox.
What were you holding, gay Latino from Vox?
Even his hand movement in fast motion is gay. Now we're here with the short-haired angry lesbian on Skype. And cable news bitching. Two gay guys sitting there eating a banana. We get the symbolism there. The truth is hiding in a closet 2 weeks later, probably along to his next Pride Parade outfit. This guy on the gay semi-Latino Vox. Oh, okay. So you really are just an angry little queer. All right. I can't deal with this Sprite anymore. Okay. He just sashays across without, like, just stop. The gay Vox Sprite is wrong. Now he could be a tranny, Your Honor. But how many lispy, angry Sprites and Vox sashay across your screen and try and tell you otherwise? Or you, by the way, the gay Mexican guy.
The gay Latino V-neck.
Gay Mexican. Or Mexican gay guy used to work. Mexican gay Latino there at Vox. Gay Latino from Vox. The token Vox gay atheist Sprite with surprisingly flaccid chest, considering how thin he is. It is very bizarre to me. Ad hominem, yes, but it was an addendum to fat.
So weird. Like, what? That is a very... He gets very worked up about that stuff. Now, what else? He's got socialism's for fags, and then what is his producer's name?
His producer's name is Jared, or as they call him, Not Gay Jared.
Not Gay Jared. They seem to be very, very concerned about gay people.
I mean, and also Crowder likes to dress up in drag like once a month to do an anti-trans video.
Yeah, you know, it's like how Alex Jones smokes weed once a year just to make sure that it's still bad. It's very, very bad.
Right. What is this?
This is a bit of Crowder's comedy chops. This is him doing a Bernie Sanders impression. I'd say Bernie Sanders impression because people might not know otherwise.
Okay, let's see.
I regret to inform you that Steven Crowder will not be at his post hosting this program on Thursday. I will be taking his place as a temporary replacement. And it's a hostile takeover, you filthy sons of bitches!
He's doing,
he's doing
literally
Gilbert
just
Gottfried.
Gilbert
he's doing
Gottfried.
Gilbert Gottfried. Well, I mean, it's a good Gilbert Gottfried. It's a little bit weird. It's the only Jew I could do, so what are you going to do?
It's conservatives doing comedy, folks.
There you go.
He's so bad at this. Even for, like, the standards of the current culture wars, he's, like, 10 years behind.
Yeah. That's true, but it is, I think he's geared his show to 14-year-old boys, 13-year-old boys, 12-year-old boys.
YouTube itself is actually, let's see if I can find this here. They actually said, we're going to look into it. Thanks for bringing this to our attention, Carlos. So, I mean, who knows what their follow-up is going to be, but...
I mean, this is I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you deal with stuff like this.
Just ignore it.
Well, it's tough because, I mean, YouTube has anti-harassment and anti-homophobia like policies, right?
I honestly I don't know what there is to do about this. I really don't know. Aside from breaking up YouTube, like, I don't know how you deal with this other than, you fight it out on YouTube. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just don't know, how you deal with this type of thing. If Bill O'Reilly can go on and call Dr. Tiller, you know, a baby killer until Tiller is assassinated.
Yeah, but Fox News doesn't care. YouTube might.
YouTube might, but I just don't know what... I think all that YouTube can do, really, is to demonetize.
Yeah, that would hurt him.
And... You simply say, this guy's been involved in stuff that is toxic. And here's the bottom line. The construction of that argument is based specifically on Crowder's content, right? It's not like it's, I'm not advocating, broadly speaking, that YouTube should do any, have any policy that can be applied fairly. There's no such thing. It's got to be, if you do stuff that ends up like directly leading in some fashion or another to inspiring people to go after somebody based upon things that are not advertiser friendly, then you get demonetized. I think it's highly problematic. I think we need to, we should not have a YouTube that is as large and as powerful as this is. We just simply should not. And there are a myriad of ways in which you make it less powerful, very similar to how you would, in some ways, deplatform Crowder. Now, you're not deplatforming, you just can't make any money off it. And maybe you don't allow links either in the descriptions for his videos. You want to put the videos out, you can do it. I don't know. I'm not recommending this. I actually think that like there's just nothing that you should be doing about this level. I don't think it reaches a level. I think, you know, being childishly homophobic like this, we should be able to push back on it in some respects. And that's easy for me to say. I'm not getting, you know, doxxed and my phone. I mean, I've been through similar type things, but it's a problem. But ultimately, what we need to do is cut off different revenue streams for YouTube so that it's just not profitable for them to put up anybody. And there's other sites for that. And maybe if they're on different platforms, it's a lot harder to sort of do this type of stuff. But this, there's a certain inevitability as we democratize media, or we have, you know, basically democratized media, that this is going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a short-term solution, but like thinking back to the idea of nationalizing these large platforms, I don't think it would work under our current system. But if we had truly democratic control over the state and over these giant new things, I have to believe that they might be somewhat better at regulating. I mean, assuming that the vast majority of people vote against homophobia or whatever.
Right, but I think we would have the same problem, wouldn't we? I mean, could you really have a you'd have the exact same problem. You just can't have one thing that is like this. It's just too problematic. I mean, that's basically what it comes down to. I don't know. Maybe there's other ways of configuring it. Like, nobody has their own unique channel anymore. That things, you have some type of like fairness doctrine in the context of the way that people watch them. I don't know.
Whatever they do, it's probably not going to be good for the left.
It's not going to be good. I think it's just going to be problematic. But all right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, Digby. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Casual Friday, and it's this Casual Friday, which means that only this tune works.
Are you ready for some pee-pee?
That was it? Why is it? It feels shorter than normal. Hello, Heather. How are you?
Hi, Sam. I'm doing fine.
I'm so out of sorts right now. Like, I'm just, I'm taking in way too much information at one time, and it's becoming, I feel overwhelmed. One would think that I've gotten used to this, but we were just talking about, you were just watching that segment on Crowder. I can't tell you how fortunate you've been to be unaware of Steven Crowder for all this time up until now. But I
had never heard of him.
And I certainly want to apologize for ruining that small part of your life that was untainted.
I'm so jealous of you, Digby.
Well, it's over now. It's over now. The question is it better to have had that ignorance and lost it, or to have never have had that ignorance at all?
I think, well, I have to say that I really think my life was better
before I knew this
person existed. Although, am I surprised? I mean, this 14-year-old boy humor, it's no different than it was when I was a kid, and that was a long time ago. I mean, I really thought that we had advanced just a little bit, that really juvenile, disgusting, stupid, you know, just it's idiotic. And the idea that there's a grown man out there in 2019 saying this stuff and everybody's laughing and snorting and, you know, guffawing over it. I'm just appalled. But on the other hand, you know, I look at the president and I look at the people, you know, on Fox News. They're really not that different. I mean, as you said, you know, we were in the break, you said, you know, well, it's not full on Nazi. And that's true. There are, that let's just not, you know, not be grateful for the fact that the guy isn't a full-blown Nazi, but he's, you know, a disgusting homophobe, and he thinks he's funny, and, you know, that's just kind of mainstream. I mean, I'm sorry, I know the president doesn't actually say this stuff about gay people, but I would bet, you know, everything I have that he says it in private, because it's just so perfectly, you know, like him, and it is exactly the kind of, you know, as Bill Barr would say, snitty, stupid humor that, you know, this is where we're at in our national discourse. And I can't say I'm surprised. This guy is probably, you know, quite popular, and I'm sure they're great. And it's not just kids who are watching. It's not just 14-year-old boys. That may be his audience. But I have to say that, you know, in the conservative side of our country now, they're all a bunch of 14-year-old boys, and they all have that kind of mentality. So, you know, I'm sure he's got a big audience for this. And it's not just kids. I'm sure it's adults as well. And probably a few stupid women, too.
I'm going to spare you the details of Ash Wednesday and the Mug Club so that you have an existential crisis. And
thank you.
And just like turn to the west and just keep walking until the Pacific basically overtakes you. But let's talk about the other thing that I think is upsetting. Obviously, Mueller this week comes out and says not a whole lot that's new, but a whole lot that's new to a lot of people, I think.
Yeah.
Right. And that was the point. Yesterday on the program, we had Marcy Wheeler on for an extended, sort of comprehensive roundup of both, like, you know, the investigation, you know, where it ended up going and not going, and what is left, and maybe what can happen going forward. But let's try and focus on the politics of this. I am becoming increasingly concerned at how poorly Nancy Pelosi, frankly, and as far as I know, Chuck Schumer is still alive and still the minority leader in the Senate. But I have not. He seems to have completely disappeared. If you told me, oh, no, he's been in a fact-finding mission in Siberia for the past 3 weeks, I would have been like, oh, OK, that makes sense. But last night, Nancy Pelosi was on Jimmy Kimmel, if I'm not mistaken, and she said, there's a school of thought that acquittal in the Senate after impeachment means you can't be tried criminally after leaving office.
Yes, exactly.
I'm sure there's a school of thought, but that school is probably in a different country and not well attended and certainly not taught by anybody. This is the relentlessness in which she is avoiding this is really disturbing to me. And I see a myriad of problems happening. I don't get what the plan is here.
Well, I keep hearing from people that, you know, when I criticize Pelosi, and let me just say up front, yeah, you know, I have great respect for Nancy Pelosi. She is an incredible legislator. She keeps her caucus together. There's a lot of great things about her. But, you know, I don't worship the woman, and I don't feel like I have to, you know, fall in line behind everything that she does, and I think she's wrong on this. I really do. I mean, that comment on Kimmel was absurd, for one thing. There is no school of thought. I don't know where she got – I mean, I've never heard that, and I read a lot about this, and there's nobody who thinks that. Moreover, she said again, I think he wants to be impeached. He didn't say, I think he wants to be impeached. She said, he wants to be impeached. That's the most ridiculous thing I have ever heard. The man had just come out earlier that day and said, I think impeachment is the most dirty, filthy, disgusting word I've ever heard. I mean, he calls it the I word. This man does not want to be impeached. And the reason he doesn't is because there's one thing he's good at. And that is he's good at sussing out how, you know, the media and his image and all of that. And he understands very well that an impeachment process carried out on live television is going to be very, very hurtful to him. He understands that because he knows how that particular part of our politics works. Apparently, he knows it better than Nancy Pelosi does. But, you know, and you know, I say the guy is useless in almost every way, but you have to pay attention to him on this one because he gets it, and he does not want to be impeached, and the idea that she keeps saying that is infuriating to me. I'm sorry.
I don't even understand what that's not an argument. Like, okay, let's say he does want to get impeached. Okay.
So?
he has some type of, like, vision. Like, this guy's so sophisticated about, you know, what happens over the course of an investigation of 15 months. Like, that's like saying he wanted to be investigated by Mueller. Like, it doesn't, like, you don't know.
It's exactly the same.
Donald Trump does not know how this is going to turn out any more than Nancy Pelosi does. I mean, that to me does not seem to be an argument. You need to follow it up with, like, it can't be just like, well, I mean, if he likes green M&Ms, then I'm going to like green M&Ms. That doesn't make any sense.
Of course it doesn't. And of course it's ridiculous. I mean, it's exactly what you say. That's a really good point. It would be like saying, well, he really wanted Mueller to investigate him. I think it's pretty clear over the course of the last 2-3 years that he did not want that investigation. Neither does he want impeachment. This whole thing is driving him crazy. And as you say, it's irrelevant what he wants. This is not his decision to make. This is the decision of the Congress. And for reasons that I mean, look, you know, people keep telling me that there's some kind of 12-dimensional chess going on here on both sides. You know, Trump, he wants to be impeached because then he'll be vindicated by the Senate and he can go around saying he was exonerated. And I'm going, yeah, whatever. He's going to say he was exonerated anyway. That changes the calculus not at all. And on the other side, it's Nancy Pelosi. She's just saying all this so that she can appear to be reluctant and then they'll get enough people for impeachment and then suddenly she'll say she had no choice. All of that, you know, okay, even if that's true. I don't care. I can only go by what she's saying, and what she's saying is ridiculous. And in my view, it's harmful because what it's doing, it's telling the American public, yeah, well, you know, yeah, he committed all these crimes and he's completely inept. And, you know, I know you sent a large majority to the Congress last November to do something about him, but I'm sorry. You know, we just can't. It's not good politics for us. It's just not going to work for us politically. So we can't really do that. So let's talk about, you know, that prescription drug plan that we passed that will never see the light of day in the Senate and Donald Trump wouldn't sign if you put a gun to his head. So let's talk about that instead, because that's what you really sent us there to do. None of this makes any sense to me. I mean, you know, it's as delusional as what you see on Fox News. in a different, you know, in the left side of the dial, where, you know, you've got people acting like this thing isn't happening. And this is what, you know, she wants to pretend, she and others, you know, I mean, I heard people, like, for instance, they're now floating this idea of censure. I mean, if they could find a more weak-ass, you know, approach to this than censure, I don't think there one exists. And they had Ro Khanna, a guy who I normally am very, you know, positive about. I mean, he's a good progressive, he's, you know, but for whatever reason, he was on Chris Hayes last night, talking about how, well, you know, maybe we could censure him. You know, Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows would stand in the middle of the floor and, you know, take off their clothes and laugh at everybody if they tried to censure Donald Trump. Like, yeah. He cares. If anything, Andrew Jackson was censured, and he loves Andrew Jackson, and he's on the $20 bill, and he's going to stay there as long as Donald Trump is in office. So, you know, this is a ridiculously weak and pathetic and impotent approach to dealing with what I think most Democrats, I really believe this, feel is an existential threat. I mean, this guy is, I mean, you know, we can talk about Bill Barr. If you don't think that guy's an existential threat, then you've got another thing coming.
Well, I mean, and I don't even think that you need to think that Donald Trump is an existential threat. I mean, I from a political standpoint, it is clear there is no plan. Their only plan is no impeachment. There is no plan. Ryan Grimm, I went to a book talk of his the other day. He said they're running out of bills in the House to bring up. Now, I'm like, what? Wait, what? Like, I mean, I can understand Nancy Pelosi. I can understand this position. We cannot impeach. I've got 25 members of my caucus who are coming from purple districts. They are nervous that impeachment will mean they will lose. I don't want to lose the House because we probably won't get the Senate. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen with the presidency. So my plan is, we're going to do the people's business. We're going to pass bills. I don't care if the Senate says no, we're going to hammer them every day. Like, you know, that's a plan. I may not agree with it, but it's a plan. That plan doesn't exist. She just has, I've got to protect 25 members of my caucus because I don't want to be the minority. You know, I want to maintain the majority. And that's the most important thing to me. And I think I think this is going to work out. But here's my question. What happens between now and that election in January 2020, if the Democrats don't impeach? Like, what? Well, like, something's going to, there's a vacuum there. And
exactly.
Something's going to fill it. And the Republicans aren't going to stand by and go like, oh, well, these guys didn't go after President Trump. So I guess we won't, try and arrest everybody else.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, the Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats may not have a plan, but the Republicans do, and they have been very open about it. We know exactly what they're going to do, and they're going to be doing it in the U.S. Senate under the auspices of Lindsey Graham and the Senate Judiciary Committee. They are going to do the investigation into the investigation. This is like this weird, you know, bizarro world counter-narrative where, you know, the whole thing was bogus. It was a complete, this investigation was ridiculous to begin with. It was a coup. Which apparently was staged even before the election, even before Donald Trump got the nomination, they were staging this coup. And weirdly enough, they never leaked a word of it, but they went after Hillary Clinton hammer and tong. Instead, I guess because they just wanted to make sure it didn't look too bad for them. I don't know what the logic is there. But this is a real thing, and people are dismissing it at their peril. Because it's not just the Senate doing a, you know, what you could dismiss as a partisan counter-narrative investigation. In the hands of the Department of Justice is doing the same thing. William Barr was out there making this case, and he made it just today on CBS, where he raced to the cameras to rebut Robert Mueller's statement on Wednesday to explain. I mean, he truly, this guy is really malevolent. I mean, I have to say that he scares me almost as much as anybody I've ever seen. I mean, this is a very, very, very slick, malevolent partisan operator. And he's pretending that he's some kind of civil liberties hero from the 1970s, right? That he's this guy who saw the excesses of the FBI and the Department of Justice during the protests and during the Vietnam War, and he just took that really seriously, which just you can't find any bigger pile of BS than that. Because this guy was, first of all, he covered up the Iran-Contra scandal by, you know, getting H.W. Bush to pardon all the people on Christmas Eve before he went out of office. And even worse than that, he was in office, and I don't think most people know this about Barr, he was in office during the 92 campaign, and he tasked the Arkansas U.S. attorney with digging into Bill Clinton and all the Whitewater stuff and all that while the campaign was still going on. He tasked him with doing it, and the only reason it didn't happen was because a U.S. attorney in Arkansas refused, and he stood up and he wrote a letter to the Department of Justice saying it was completely ridiculous, that he was not going to do it, it was unethical, and so they had to hold back. Well, we know that investigation went on anyway, right? I mean, and it was done by the press and the Arkansas Project and all that other stuff. William Barr was one of the most partisan, ruthless partisan operatives ever in the Department of Justice the first time. And he's doing exactly the same thing now. And he's doing it, you know, in this most cynical way possible, saying that, you know, what he said, and this is very dangerous, what he said on CBS this morning, he said, I think the greater threat to our system is resistance to the President of the United States. I'm like, really? I mean, when did that happen? Okay. You know, and he said, he used those very words. There's resistance to the President of the United States is the greater threat. Then he was talking about the foreign interference. And so, you know, this is a very, very dangerous guy. So as you say, getting back to the point, that there will be a vacuum. There is a vacuum already. And as the Democrats seem to be dithering in 100 different directions, they're very clear on what direction they're going in. And that is going to become the story. And you can already see the New York Times and the Washington Post and all the networks are kind of, you know, they're kind of wandering around the fringes of this, you know, bogus scandal going, that's a little smoke.
We need a story. We need a story.
Yeah,
we need a story.
Those hours.
And I just want to remind people, the Benghazi thing.
Absolutely.
The Republicans had five different entities as controlling the House, maybe in the Senate too. You know, I think it switches off. Investigate Benghazi. And it ultimately was the investigation that brought up the whole personal server thing.
Right.
So,
exactly.
I mean, you don't know when an investigation starts, you just cannot tell where it's what havoc, what benefit it's going to create down the road. And I will say, not only is the overall notion of not pursuing impeachment creating a vacuum, the dithering that you're talking about is also creating, I think, another problematic vacuum, which I don't blame people for, but, you know, on two or three different cable news shows, the proponent of impeachment brought on to talk about it was Rob Reiner. Now,
yeah.
I love Rob Reiner. I think he's great. But this should not be happening. It should not be Robert De Niro as the voice of impeaching this guy. This is serious stuff. Politicians, lawyers, judges, people, non-celebrities should be the most prominent voices that are calling for impeachment. But there is a vacuum because the leadership of the Democratic Party has ceded this ground. And so I don't blame, filmmakers and actors coming in and making this appeal, but I do not think it's effective. I just don't think that it's reaching the right people. Now, maybe they can convince Pelosi. I hope so. But this is a real problem. Like, now backbenchers in the Democratic caucus and other people have to stand up because there's no plan. And the only thing worse than a bad plan is no plan. I genuinely believe that. And this is, it's just highly, I can't get over it. I mean, this is total malpractice here. And I think the presidential candidate should step up and put more pressure on Pelosi to the extent that they can. But, you know, they're all looking for support, so they're afraid to do it. This is a bad situation. And I don't know if she thinks it's just going to go away. Like, how could Nancy Pelosi think that, like, well, if we get past Mueller and this and that, nobody's going to be thinking about impeachment anymore. Wait, what? Like, you're going to maintain the driving force that brought you the greatest midterm electoral victory in the history of midterms. And you're going to sort of try and, like, I'm trying just to, like, trying to figure out how this works. We work with Donald Trump or we don't work with Donald Trump. People won't notice that he's continuing to, I don't know, do stuff that is impeachable. And so the calls for impeachment are going to die down. And won't that necessarily involve an acceptance of Donald Trump, which is going to undercut the elections in 2020? Like, I just don't even understand. I would love to see just the flow chart of how this works in her mind.
Well, you know, I don't understand it either. Although from what I gather, they have really convinced themselves that the reason they won the election last November was based upon their domestic kitchen table issue agenda. And that's because everybody was talking about that on the campaign trail. People were talking about health care and, you know, prescription drugs and taxes and college loans and all that stuff, which is true. They were talking
absolutely
about it. But the subtext of everything that happened in November, and I cannot believe that these people don't know that, was they knew that none of that stuff was going to happen as long as Donald Trump is president. None of it was going to happen. They sent them there that November. They didn't sit around and wait and go, you know, hey, whatever, I'm going to get on with my life, and then in 2020 I'll come out and I'll vote against him. They didn't do that. They went out and to send a clear message that they wanted Donald Trump stopped. I absolutely know this in my bones. This was not about them saying, you know, we really want you to go to Washington and ignore Donald Trump and just pass some symbolic bills, which will be really nice, makes people feel good, that we know won't get passed. But that's what we want you to spend the next 2 years doing, and that's what we sent you there to do, and we don't care about any of the rest of this stuff. And furthermore, Sam, I think it's insulting to the electorate to suggest that they don't care about any of this stuff. And that's really what they're saying. Oh, come on, you know, this impeachment thing, this is just a waste of time. He'll just go around saying he was exonerated because it's not bipartisan. And, you know, what people really care about, and they come out and say this openly on TV every single day, what people really care about is their own lives and what's going on in their own lives. Basically what they're saying is, our voters don't care about the country. They don't care whether or not we have a criminal in the White House. They don't care about the fact that our system is being totally destroyed and that the president goes overseas and makes a spectacle of himself and that everything in our system has been turned inside out because of all of this and that the Republicans are now a nihilistic, I mean, you know, can we say Mitch McConnell, you know, a nihilistic blight on our Constitution. They don't care about any of that. What they care about is they just care about themselves. That's all they care about. You know, as long as we talk to them about what we're going to give them and what they have, they'll be happy. I mean, I think that's insulting. I mean, I really do. I think the American people do care about what's happening. I think they are, you know, maybe they're confused by it, and I can't blame them because, you know, you've got Democrats running around dithering, Robert Mueller making speeches, William Barr, Donald Trump running around the world, you know, talking about Kim Jong-un like he's his best friend. All that stuff is a confusing morass that it's hard to sort of, you know, work your way through it. But nonetheless, they care about it. And I think, you know, look at this town hall that Justin Amash had earlier this week. I mean, Justin Amash is a super conservative Republican. He was one of the founders of the Freedom Caucus. He came in on the Tea Party wave. He's a libertarian. And he ran on all those issues that all those Tea Party guys ran on in 2010. But he's the only one who meant it. Apparently, he is the only one who actually cared about, you know, the Constitution and the Gadsden flag and civil liberties and all the stuff they pretended to care about. And he went and had a, he came out for impeachment. And by the way, if anybody hasn't read his Twitter feed on impeachment, you should do it because it's really very clarifying. I mean, I think he's ironically one of the best people who has actually explained the Mueller report is a Republican, a very conservative Republican. So there you have it. And he went had this town hall and there were people there, who were obviously, there were Trumpies there. There were sort of, standard, right-wing suburban Republicans. There were Democrats. And he was very well received. And he was well received in a respectful way. They gave him a standing ovation for saying, when someone said that we admire you for the courage of standing up and speaking your mind and telling the truth as you see it. And, I'm looking at that. I'm going, if a conservative Republican can get that, you have to wonder if maybe, some Democrats might try that.
The other sort of fascinating thing out of that same town hall was the clip of that woman who said, I had no idea. I've only listened to conservative news, and I had no idea there was anything bad in the Mueller report about Donald Trump at all. And, this goes to show that there is room to educate people. Like I said, Mueller delivered nothing new, but new to a lot of people. And I just don't think, and I will admit that like a week and a half ago, I thought Pelosi's close. She's turning. And it seems to me she is not. And everything she is doing now, I think is basically just completely limits all the possibilities. I mean, at one point, the whole point of impeachment is not to get Donald Trump out because you're not going to get Donald Trump out. Maybe there's a 2% chance. The whole point is to make the Republican Party own him. And they have failed to do this since day one. They failed at the convention. They failed during the campaign. Clinton and Schumer in particular, Schumer bragging about he's got to deal with Paul Ryan, and Schumer and Clinton, we're all going to do this repatriating the taxes. They have failed to do this. And the only thing that I could honestly that makes any sense. And when you see Joe Biden literally articulate this, right? That they're going to revert back to the mean after Donald Trump is not around and they're going to be okay after this. They're in a fever, whatever, all this BS, which still it shocks me that not a single candidate, frankly, not a single one has had the smarts to go out there and say, even if they do it through surrogates, Joe Biden is criticizing Barack Obama here. Because they didn't have Donald Trump 4 years ago, and they didn't work with the
right. Somebody will at the debates, I bet.
Well, they should have done it earlier because it's also political malpractice. But the idea that the Democratic establishment, in some way, refuses to lay a glove on the Republicans and attach Donald Trump to these Republicans, which is what impeachment's all about. On day one, you set out, this man is going to be in office in 2020. We're going to do our job. But the reason why he's going to be here is because the Republicans will not do theirs.
Exactly. And why isn't that a great argument? I don't understand them. That's a great argument. It's saying, look, we're going to lay out everything right here. It's going to be right here for you. Just like the Mueller report, right? Only it'll be broader. It'll have emoluments and corruption and all the malfeasance and the abuse of power, lay the whole thing out and then say, and you want to know why this guy is still in office? You want to know why he's even on the ballot right now? Because all of these Republicans over here refuse.
Don't care about the Constitution. We could sit up here and we could keep passing bills that we know are not going to pass. But what we're going to do is we're going to do our job and provide oversight and let the American public know exactly who has been sitting in the office and who the Republican Party is protecting. And you make that argument. It's beyond me now that because the other thing is you and I have had this conversation a couple of times. Nobody seems to be talking about. Everybody discusses one side of the ledger. you know, do we impeach or not? Do we, you know, like what's the value in impeaching? Nobody talks about what the cost in not impeaching is. It's stunning to me. Well,
it seems obvious to me that the cost of it is that Donald Trump will look like, you know, the strong one who basically cowed the Democrats into not taking action and dithering around like a bunch of chickens with their heads cut off. And that he basically withstood. He's a strong guy. He stood up to them. He basically survived. And look at him. And a lot of people are going to find that a hell of a lot more compelling than the Democrats running around like, you know, like fools that couldn't figure out what to do about it. It's very worrisome. It really does worry me.
The one tell for me is this whole 5% tariff thing. Because that's how you know he's like, he's in a sort of like a panic mode. They always return to the brown people whenever there's a problem. And that's basically...
Absolutely. And now everybody's talking about it and the market is tanking and he's doing all this stuff. And again, another impeachable offense. He's using a phony national emergency to enact powers that no other president has ever enacted under these circumstances. This is crazy time. And we're just like shrugging our shoulders. Oh, okay, tariffs on Mexico, sure, in order to stop drugs and immigrants. I mean, that's ridiculous. And the idea that this is happening and nobody even cares about it anymore is yet another bit of evidence that the man is completely out of control. And you know, the Democrats are going to sit and go, oh, no. I mean, now, if they cave on the USMCA, the new NAFTA, as a result of this, I don't know what I'll do. I'm going to put myself into a home because that will show their weakness more than anything else. And that's what he's trying to do, you know.
Well, Heather, if you could do me a favor, save me a bed in that home.
Everyone's welcome. We're all going to be there.
See if you can get me a room with a window. That's all I care about.
I'll get the reservation in line there.
Always a pleasure with a little asterisk next to it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Sam. Have a great weekend, everybody.
All right. I think we got a couple minutes here. Let's call Michael. As you know, Michael is at a retreat where he is some type of silent retreat. And we're going to give him a call, just check on him to see what's up. See if he's do we have the Chiron that we set? All right, we're setting it up right now. Okay. Let me call. Oh, I didn't answer. Hold on, here we go. Try it one more time. What is going on with our phones here? Oh, here we go. Oh, Michael? Is that you? Michael, I know you're on a silent retreat. So if it's you, just one beep for yes, two beeps for no on your phone. Oh, okay. Hi, Michael. How are you? Are you good? All right. I'm glad to hear that. Well, I should tell you that, let's see, what should I tell Michael?
Tell him about Dave.
Oh, yeah. Well, you missed Dave Rubin having a total implosion, and it was great. It's true. It is absolutely true. I'm sorry, but it is absolutely true. Dave Rubin had a very difficult time this week. Bernie Sanders came in to the office. Yes. Yes, absolutely. He did. You missed that. I'm sorry. We also, what's that? Oh, yeah. Lula da Silva called in while you were. Yeah, no, he did. They let him call from prison. And then, of course, we also HBO show came in and taped the show. Yeah, sorry, buddy. We did mention that you were here. We got your name wrong. We misspelled your name. And I canceled your live Chicago show. I'm sorry, but I just, we had a misplaced call. And what else can I tell you? Oh, we've been sponsored by Nike on this show, so we can't wear any more Adidas stuff. I'm sorry. Well, yes, it's true. I'm sorry. No is not the proper response there. The answer is yes, it's true. So I'm sorry. But what else can I tell you? That's about it. We're having a great time in your absence. And don't know if you're going to be back, but let's face it. I mean, things are going great here. So take your time. Anything you want to say? No? Are you sure about that? You played some music? You playing some outro music? All right. Well, Michael, great talking to you, as always. Appreciate it. Bye-bye. Okay. All right. Hung up on Michael. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll call Judy Gold. Lost your song? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, every now and then on a Friday, we get super lucky and we have the opportunity to play this song.
Level-headed.
Fuck you!
Calm, cool, and collected.
I have a bigger penis than him.
Judy Gold is on the line to keep us all connected.
What the fuck is the matter with him?
A steady hand to guide us. She'll keep us calm and carry on.
No fucking way!
Too bad Jimmy Reefer Cuck didn't find her worthy of a song. Well, Judy Gold.
And he's such a fucking penis head liar. I'm not kidding. That's the president of the United States. That's the president. What the fuck?
Okay. Like, this guy, all right. Judy?
I can't even, like, okay. Can we, yeah, what? What were you going to say? Sorry.
How are you?
I'm great. You know, like, I think everything, you know, I think that when someone basically comes out and says, look, I am telling you right now, this guy's a fucking lying piece of shit who is ruining our, I'm like, I'll do the subtext of that fucking Mueller, what was it? A speech? Whatever
press
the fuck
conference,
it was.
Press conference, yeah.
Okay, press conference. I can't even think anymore, okay? Basically saying, hey, I just want you to know I'm Robert Mueller. I'm really honest. I'm a public servant. I'm really smart. I just, you know, I'm so proud to be American. This guy's a fucking asshole. This guy's a fucking liar. He should get the fuck taken out of office right now. Impeach him. I'm telling you right now, he committed crimes. This stupid fucking law is presented. And I'm so good. I'm going to totally go by the rules. get him the fuck out now. Okay, that's basically what he said. And then we have to hear, well, we have to get more information. And, I mean, I don't know the I word. The I word. If I hear the fucking I word one more time, that motherfucking lying piece of shit. Hello?
Hello?
I can't. And he's like, you know, he's just, he's, what more do you need? What more do you need? And Barr, I want to fucking take his, I want to grab him by the jowls and fucking, ugh. Hello?
Hello?
I can't take it anymore. What's going on? No, I'm serious. Like, what's going to happen? Like, how? What more do the Democrats need?
There's one Republican
with the ball.
I just spent 40 minutes asking Digby the same question. And she spent 40 minutes asking me the same question.
What? We have no, we don't, our, the Democrat scrotal sack, okay, has not dropped, okay?
I don't know what that.
It needs to drop. I don't even know what that means, but whatever, the balls.
The balls have not dropped.
They haven't. Is anyone, he covered John McCain's name. Like, that is mental. It is mental. It is fucking psychotic and mental. Baby, toddler, jealous. We have to cover, like, seriously, we are dealing with, like, the most immature, dumb, lying, fucking idiotic, enlarged prostate asshole. I can't.
We have footage of
his prostate.
No, of his prostate, okay, and but we do have footage of Meghan McCain talking about it. Which,
oh, I can't. Yeah, go ahead.
This is let's bring this up. I mean, this is one of those things like where it's sort of like, you know, you're doing a joke on a joke where it's sort of hard,
right,
to figure out who, you know, like which is worse, what Trump actually did or the way that
right,
Meghan McCain phrases it. Like,
right,
it's like that the problem is, well, this is the thing about Meghan McCain, right? It's like,
yeah,
she is the worst person to talk about this. Because,
oh, exactly.
But nevertheless, that's what we have. Here she is on The View talking about the report.
I'm gonna vomit.
That,
okay.
And we should say Donald Trump has addressed this and said he didn't know about it, but you know, he hated John McCain, so people who worked for him knew about it,
right,
so they did
still,
it on his behalf.
He still, right, but he still, even when he said I had no idea about it, he prefaced that with I hate him.
Right.
He prefaced his statement about it with, oh, by the way, I do fucking hate him, but I didn't know about that, which is basically say I knew about it and I fucking hate him. That's exact. Fuck him. Go ahead, Megan.
Here we go.
The White House apparently emailed Navy officials telling them to hide the name of the USS John McCain warship. Now, you know who's denying he knew anything about it, but he does say that whoever made the order was well-meaning since they knew he wasn't a fan of John McCain. Hey, McCain. You want to take this one?
Yeah, thank you for letting us do this topic first, because I just want to get this out of the way.
Sure.
First and foremost, I had journalists emailing me all Memorial Day about this, asking me, just sort of giving me a heads up this was happening. So the idea that people didn't know is ridiculous. They're journalists I trust.
Yeah.
I will say the president's actions have consequences. And when you repeatedly are attacking my father and war heroes.
Pause it for 1 second.
They don't have any consequences. What are you talking about? He has no consequences. He's got that fucking turtle and that fucking, what kind of dog has the jowl? What's the fucking dog with the jowl?
I don't know. A bloodhound?
Yeah,
bulldog?
Bloodhound. Fucking Bar, bloodhound Bar. Okay? And fucking Lindsey Gay Graham. I can't. You know, all these people are just, he has no consequences. None. And first of all, Megan, what's up? Yes, I've known about this all weekend. And let me just get this out of the way because I'm like really important. No one can talk about my father except for me.
Well, I know. Wait a second. Now, where do you think she's going with this? What do you think the implications are going to be that she points out here? Like that Donald Trump would have at no small cost, you know, have this covered so that or his people would have it covered so they didn't have to see it. What is
right.
this?
We have to pay for that, by the way. We have to pay for that. Go ahead.
What is this going to lead to, do you think, Meghan McCain is going to say?
You know what? That's an excellent question, Sam.
I mean there's a million different ways you could go with this, right? This guy is acting like some type of autocrat. Like the idea that like you don't like a name, so you want it erased is bizarre and creepy, or this is indicative of a guy who like is so mentally unstable that his advisors have to be worried that he can't control himself in the context of like doing a ceremony for the Japanese, that he's going to end up commenting on the John McCain. Like they had sailors who had John McCain
on their thing. They got the day off.
They weren't allowed to go to the event. They were kept out of the event.
I know.
What is she going to say? It's going to create a culture in the military where instead of being professional, they start to think that they just belong to Donald Trump. Right. Like, cause that's a problem here. I mean, if you're like, I want the military, standard procedure, I don't care. You are going to now respond to my whim. That is actually not the fear that Meghan McCain has. Go back just a little bit.
And that is the correct fear.
Those are all different options.
Yes.
Here's hers.
We'll say the president's actions have consequences. And when you repeatedly are attacking my father and war heroes, it creates a culture in the military where people are clearly fearful to show, my father's name in one way or another. And that, I think, is what has started this chain of events and actions. If you're afraid to have a U.S. McCain hat or show the banner on the warship, which, by the way, is named after my grandfather and great grandfather, who were the very first 4-star admirals in the Navy, and both integral in ending World War II and the Vietnam War.
Oh my God.
You're putting people in
the
military in horrific situations.
Okay, that's so. There it is. Okay. The danger is that we're creating a culture where people are afraid to say the words John McCain. That to me doesn't feel like a culture.
Yeah, dangerous. That's exactly right, Megan. And let me tell you something, Megan.
Wow.
The world revolves around you. There's a thing about her. Like I loved what she said at his her eulogy was amazing. Okay. It was amazing.
Okay.
But I don't understand. Like, she attacks Amy Klobuchar for, talking about him in a positive way, you know? She attacks her, and yet this is... Do you understand that the guy is a fucking mental case? Like, I don't even know what to say. It's so annoying. I can't fucking believe they had to drape. It is so fucking, it's nursery school.
It's nuts.
Hey, Judy.
It's crazy. Yes, go ahead.
What do you think about this drinking game? Every time that Meghan McCain says, "My father, my father, my father."
Right.
We all take a sip of arsenic.
I think we'd be dead, like literally in under a minute.
It's a pretty disturbing time, isn't it? It's been like this for quite a while. Oh, your music's coming through.
Let's not even talk about the lying and the fucking, the no collusion bullshit and Putin and China and Kim Jong-un. Let's like forget all of that and only deal with his mental health. He should have been out. He should be out. He's lied. How many fucking times?
Well, he's not. I mean, that even if there's impeachment, he's not going anywhere.
Right. I understand. I think we know that. I don't think other people know that.
Who? What do you mean by that?
I think we know that, that he's not going to go anywhere. But I don't think people in, you know, who don't follow politics that. I think they think, you know, like Nixon, who resigned, you know, that they got kicked out. Like, I mean, like Clinton, first of all, oh, this is the other fucking thing I want to say, okay? This whole idea, like, Clinton was more popular after he was impeached and we don't want to have that. Yeah, he was more popular because it was about a fucking blowjob. It was about fucking sex in the office with a consenting adult getting fucked. It was about getting fucked. That's what it was about. They all wished they could get fucked. And they all felt sorry for him, like, oh, I mean, yeah, this was bad, but, you know, at least you got a fucking, you know, blowjob, okay? That's why he was more popular, because they were like, oh, he's a guy, he needed to get fucked, okay? That's it. This is about our democracy, our constitution. Like, and if I hear constitutional crisis one more fucking time, I mean, we're in a crisis, we're in a fucking crisis, period. Constitutional fucking whatever. The earth is fucking going on fire, okay? There's global warming. This guy is like a dictator. Like, he's just, oh!
Sorry. How's everything else going?
You know, my blood pressure is high.
Is that right?
No, it is right now. Is anyone outraged by, like, it's like, you know, Nancy Pelosi is very smart. She knows exactly what she's doing. We need to trust her. You know what? The guy is mentally ill. He's a mental case. Mnuchin, I'd like to fucking smash his fucking face in a fucking fuck. I hate Steve Mnuchin is such a dick, isn't he? He's
yes.
Like just that, like, oh yeah. No, yeah, we're not going to do that. No, we're not doing that. Listen, someone should suffocate him with, like, you know, $20 bills shove them down his throat. So
you're speaking metaphorically, right? Yeah.
Metaphorically.
Metaphorically.
Yeah, I don't want to get in trouble.
But, right.
You know.
So.
Anyone else? Let me ask you a question. Anyone else behave like him, like Trump? Would they still have their job? Go.
No, of course not. Of course not.
Okay.
If Trump was a Democrat, he still wouldn't. He wouldn't have his job.
Right. If any Democrat acted, behaved like he did, what would they be doing? What would they be doing?
They would be talking about him in the past tense.
Right. Right.
He's already gone.
It's not right. Someone's got to stick up. We got the guy from Michigan. Someone else has got a fucking.
It's.
Let's go.
I just want to contemplate this: the idea that Justin Amash is going to end up running on his calls for impeachment and perhaps winning in his district. You got Democrats who are going to vote for him.
Right, and yet Democrats won't do that.
What's really going to drive me nuts is when Susan Collin comes out for impeachment, and that's the way that she gets reelected.
Oh, I know. Yep. Well, I thought that his behavior was very bad. So I am actually going to support his impeachment. And I want him out. We need better leadership.
So, Judy, Did you take a vacation at all over the past couple months? You get a chance to
No. I'm writing a book. I'm writing a book, so I have to finish my book. It's on freedom of speech.
Is it really?
And it's called Yes I Can Say That. Fuck You If You Can't Take a Joke. It's for HarperCollins.
Really?
So I've been working on that. Yes. Sam, I'm an author almost.
So this is now so let's talk about Nick DiPaolo.
Yes, go ahead.
Did you see? His cover for his new album?
No, let me look at it.
Oh, you didn't? How did you miss all this?
Because all I do is write all day.
Well, I mean, this
Under
is right up your
off
alley.
Murdered Black Lives. Oh yeah, look at that. All right, yeah.
Now,
that's him. That's totally him.
I don't think Nick should be arrested for this. But
absolutely not.
No, of course not.
You know what? Freedom of speech.
Right. Well,
look, you're going, oh, Nick DiPaolo, should I listen to his album? Oh, wow. He's flipping off these protesters. I don't think I'm going to really like him. I'm going to like, oh, that guy was killed. So, and he's giving him the finger. Okay. So that's his choice.
Okay.
Like, you can't shut anyone. If you shut one person up, you shut everyone up.
Okay. But so let me ask you this, because I don't know the premise of your book, but do you think that there is there are comedians out there who are being shut down any differently than what you've just said?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like, I think there are. That Ahmed.
Who's that? Wait, I don't know that
one. Oh my! Oh, so he went on stage in Florida. He's Egypt. He was born in Egypt. He got at a club in Florida in Naples, and he has a joke where he's like, "Oh, you know, Middle Eastern. Any other Middle Eastern people here?" Some people clap. He's like, "Well, that's cool. A bunch of Middle Eastern people are here. But it only takes one of us to tell a joke." Okay. And then he says, I would lock the doors. Something like that. Some guy in the audience calls 911.
Calls 911?
Yes. And they come the next night before his show. He calls 911 saying that Ahmed was trying to start a terrorist cell.
What?
Oh my God, it's ridiculous!
And did they stop the show?
No, they okay. First of all, they sent two police officers of color, of course, because you know, and they were like, "Do whatever you're doing." And he even got an email from the 911 operator. He got an email from her like, "Sorry, we have to call." I mean, like,
okay,
everyone knows it's ridiculous, but he does meet and greets after the show. He waits for the audience. He takes pictures with them and shakes their hand. Terrorists. As he says, terrorists don't do meet and greet.
So, okay. So, all right. So we're not really, but he's not being shut down. Like, I mean, obviously, I think that guy
in the audience is a lunatic. Right. But he was shut down at a college gig, shockingly enough.
All right. But that's just a college gig like that is just somebody saying the equivalent of like, oh, I just realized that the guy he's giving the finger to is a dead Black Lives Matter protester. I'm not buying that album. I'm not listening to that album. I mean, that's what happens at the college, right? Like, there's no...
Right, just don't go. Turn it off.
Or the college, but that's the college not going by saying, like, we're not going to host you.
Yeah, I mean, don't you think that the Ahmed example just kind of shows that the people who are more likely to have their freedom of speech interfered with by the government, which is what the First Amendment is actually referring to, tend to be marginalized people and people who are speaking out against the entrenched power structures. Like,
well, but the government didn't stop him. They just showed up and basically apologized.
Well, okay, be that right. as it may. It could have gone differently for him. Like,
well, I mean,
my
yeah.
friend Jake Flores tweeted a joke about killing ICE agents that was very funny, and the DHS showed up at his house.
Yes, that we. Right. Yeah, we. I mean, that is a good example of something that's problematic. But the college thing, I mean, obviously, I think that the college is being ridiculous, but that's not the same as. That to me is the same as an individual saying, I'm not going to buy Nick DiPaolo's album. Isn't it?
It's not the same?
No, it is the same.
Yes, exactly. Listen, here's the deal. You know, it's all about power. You know, I've learned a lot researching for this book. It is all about power.
Yes.
You know, freedom of speech is, you know, the First Amendment. The people who are in power, like Trump, can say whatever the fuck he wants because he has the power to do it. It's the, you know, I talked to Ira Glass. You know, they wanted to shut up Malcolm X. They want to shut up people who are telling the truth. They wanted to shut up Lenny Bruce. You know, anyone who's telling the truth and doesn't have the power that, you know, these law enforcement people have, or they want to shut them up. They want to shut up comedians. Nick DiPaolo is very obviously a conservative. He's got, you know, he is who he is. He represents a certain kind of person, and he happens to be a comedian, and his comedy is through that point of view. And if you don't like it, don't watch it, don't buy the album, and just, you can say, oh, you're an asshole, but that's it.
Right.
Fighting Nick DiPaolo's album cover is not going to change the world.
Well, wait a second. Those are two different things. Right. Like,
okay.
Like saying, yeah, Nick DiPaolo has every right to do that album cover. But I also have every right to go on Twitter or anybody and say, like, nobody should buy that album cover because it's gross.
Right.
I mean, that album.
Right.
And that's not
every, like, that, right. You shut one person up, then you shut everyone. Like, it's like saying, I don't want this person at my college because they're, you know, right wing Nazi propaganda. Okay. And then, so they say you can't come to the college, and then they have some, like, you know, lefty left, pro gay, pro gender fluidity, pro whatever. And these other people are like, well, you didn't have that one, so you can't have this one. And that's perfect. You know, you can't shut anyone up. You
well,
can't
wait a second.
It.
But wait, but I am equating the idea that a college would disinvite Nick DiPaolo with the same act as me as an individual choosing not to buy his album. Like, the college is not saying you
can't.
It's
exactly the same thing. Right. Yeah, it's a private college. I'm just saying, if that private college, if it's a private thing, if it's, you know,
right.
If that college says, no, you can't come here, you're, you know, we don't want you. Okay.
Right.
And so you're not coming. And then they have someone else with a completely different opinion. Those people who can protest, you know, they
sure.
can stand there and say, yeah, it's freedom of speech.
Well, of course. The college has the right to say,
one,
like, you know what? We feel
right,
more comfortable
right.
with this perspective than the other.
Right.
And so we're going
right. to. If it's a private college, if it's a private
right,
college.
Right. Right. If it's
not
a,
if it's a,
if
state
it's a public,
college
it's a,
or, yeah.
a state college, it gets a little more
public
complicated.
University. No.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
See, I just get annoyed when comedians try to be snowflakes about it themselves, and they conflate they think, like, people not coming to their shows or not laughing at their jokes means they're being censored, you know. Like, I feel like
right.
a lot of people can
no,
dish it out, but they can't take
like,
it.
Like, it's okay to complain, like,
right.
college audiences suck today. But it's another to say, like, it's completely wrong that I'm shut out of the college circuit because of, you know, PC culture. Well, no, it's just like your comedy is just out of step. And, you know,
right.
you know,
yeah.
30,
yeah, look,
30 years ago,
know what's funny. Yeah.
when Andrew Dice Clay was king, you know. You could have people who are bitching like, my comedy is not, you know, misogynist, and I could never get booked. Well, you know, it's like that's you're
right.
Out
of- I have that. I have a whole chapter on that. I
right.
have a chapter on that. It's like, look, you know, he's playing this character. He's doing that's his. You can't shut him up. That's what this country is. That's why people come here. You know, Nick DiPaolo is a person, and he has his own points of view, and he decides, like, just like Kathy Griffin with the head, the fake head, you know, like,
right.
okay, big deal, she fucking held it, oh, it's the end of the fucking world. This guy, these fucking lawmakers, like, none of what these comedians are doing have any effect on your life. They don't.
But wait, where is
you
this coming from? Is there a real threat here? I mean, you know, like, I mean,
no, I'm just saying they act like it's a big threat. The threat is your fucking lying ass motherfucking president and Mitch fat fucking turtle face McConnell and fat Bill Barr and Steve Mnuchin and Lindsey Graham. I mean, these people, they're making laws. They're affecting people's lives, everyday lives. They're affecting a woman's right to decide what to do with her fucking body. This is a comedian, and he's off color, and you don't like what he's doing. It has no effect on you. Turn the channel off. Don't buy his album. Write about how you fucking hate his album.
But he has a right to do whatever the fuck he wants.
Right. He has a right to do it. But you could also boycott. You're okay with boycotts.
Right. Exactly. I boycott. Right. I won't go to Chick-fil-A. I don't even let my kids go to fucking Chick-fil-A. Motherfuckers.
Judy, when does this book come out?
The book is coming out at the end of November. The end of October.
And when will I receive my advance copy?
You'll get your advance copy as soon as I finish writing the fucking book.
All right. Well, maybe you should get on it.
It's very... Okay, I don't need that. That's all I hear. Every day, Elisa calls me. She's like, oh, did you get any writing done? How much more do you have?
Writing a book is a nightmare, isn't it?
It's a nightmare. It's all you can think about. You can't do anything else.
I
have dinner with my family, and I'm like, oh, my God, I should be writing.
I did not enjoy the process. I did one many years ago.
It's not a good process.
And it was not...
But it's like I'm under... They only gave me 6 months, so that's the hardest part.
Well, it would be even worse if they gave you 2 years, because then you would just be like saving it until the last, like, you know, month 22.
Right. It's like studying.
Ugh, horrible. But Judy, I am very, very excited to read it. Do we have a title?
Oh my God.
Do we have a title?
It's called Yes, I Can Say That.
Yes, I Can Say That.
And then the little title, you know, underneath it says, fuck you if you can't take a joke. But, you know, the you is an asterisk.
Wait. Oh, yeah. Okay. How do you get around that? Apparently you cannot, you can say it, but you can't spell it.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you can say it and you can say shithole countries and whatever the pussy and whatever, but you can't spell it. Yeah.
Can't spell it.
You know, and if a kid sees that, they're going to be scarred for life.
It's true.
You know? And if a kid sees the Nick DiPaolo giving the finger to these protesters, you know, that's going to be the end of the world, you know? I mean, stop picking on comedians. Stop it.
Judy Gold.
Hello?
Well, I'm going to keep picking on you to come on the show. What do you think about that?
I love you guys. I love you guys.
We love you.
I get, you know how many people stop me at my gigs and are like, oh, I heard you on Sam Cedar and I heard you on the Majority, but like a lot. Not that I want to give
single,
you a big head,
single digits, you know. Single digits, but that is
a lot. Oh, but can I plug something?
Of course.
Oh, good. Milford, Pennsylvania tomorrow night in the Milford Theater. It's historic. And if anyone's near Milford, you have to fucking come to my show.
Where is Milford?
Okay. And I went, it's where I went to fucking sleepaway camp. And I hated it because I was like 6 feet tall and 12 years old. And I was looking at my bunk when I was, you know, leaving for the summer and leaving after, you know, the summer was over and someone carved in the wall, Bigfoot slept here. Okay, thank you.
My gosh.
Isn't that horrible?
Oh,
isn't that fucking horrible?
That's horrible.
I know.
Sorry.
And you laughed, but whatever. But it's like, that's the story of my life.
But it was a sad laugh. You know, I can tell you that my experience at camp, I would cry like a baby on the ride home.
Right.
From camp. I was very, very unhappy to return back to home.
Oh, my God, same.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But I only went...
I hated it.
To be fair,
wait to go home.
I only went for 8 weeks a summer, so was... Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's my kids. They loved it. They, yeah, I was like,
I
oh, my
God,
this
go
is
home.
The fucking greatest.
Nope.
I loved camp.
Everyone's
so
happy.
Because yep. I was such a loser in my normal life at school. And then I went to camp and I had so many friends because I was with all the other theater losers. It was great.
That's great because you know what? I was a loser in school and then I went to camp and I was a loser too.
Well, look at them now, though. Where are those people?
Yeah.
Leave them in the dust. Judy Gold.
I don't even know. I blocked it out. I really wish, I would love to hear from people who are in my bunk and tell me what the fuck, because I remember is, yeah.
Well,
you don't
I fell out
too
of the top
early.
Bunk.
Folks can also
I
contact
fell out of the fucking
the
top bunk.
People what? Can contact the show and we can do a Judy Gold, This Is Your Life at camp.
I love that. I love that. Okay.
Judy, love you. Appreciate
I miss
it.
You guys.
Talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye.
So long.
All right, folks, that is the
free show that we have for you today. We're going to head into the fun half, wherein we've got some very, very fun video. Fun video of Bill Barr lying on television. We have fun video of a preacher who apparently cannot handle being questioned on his use of and ownership of massive private jets.
Closer to God.
We've got Lou Dobbs, who is so befuddled by where we are as a country right now that he cannot read anymore.
Lou Dobbs struggles with Trump's syntax.
We have Laura Ingraham, who is not in any way a white supremacist, basically bemoaning the censoring on social media of a... Is he an avowed Nazi?
Oh, yes. He okay. is very explicitly wants a race war Nazi.
There you go. So, I know. Don't mean to get too moralistic about things, but we will take a quick break. I'll remind you that this program relies on your support. You can support this free show by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, we give you extra content every day. We give it to you commercial free. If you are one of those people who are going through a temporary or prolonged or you're not sure a period of financial stress or insecurity, or you anticipate one or whatever, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We will hook you up. We will not keep anyone out of the free fun half for financial reasons. Now, I say this. It takes a while for us to get to the emails. We're constantly doing it, but we're just always constantly behind. So if you send an email, and then like a half a day later, you're like, why are you asking me to send an email when you're not answering the email? I can assure you, you're just not getting the drift of what I mean. When I mean it takes us a while, I mean like it can take like a week or two or three sometimes. It just depends on the rhythm of things.
Pony Express.
It's like the Pony Express. But we will get there, I promise you. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. I'm rushing through that because... Yesterday, we got a phone call about co-ops, and I know maybe I should just save this for the fun half because it came through on the fun half, but and somebody said, where is the concept of co-ops come from? And I can't remember. Somebody claimed that it was Marx that started co-ops. I can't remember what the caller said, but this is what the emailer wrote. Today a caller said that co-ops were started by Marx, and you said you didn't know. Modern co-ops were started in 1844 in Rochdale, England. Marx was in his 20s at the time, but how much he interacted with Rochdale folks or was influenced by them, I have no idea. I worked in co-ops for decades. Co-ops all over the world give credit to the Rochdale pioneers. Marx may have pioneered the collective, but those are different than co-ops. Co-op, everyone contributes, but they also have personal autonomy. In a collective, everyone throws everything into the same pot and get taken care of by the collective theory according to their needs. I have lived and worked in both. In my humble opinion, collectives don't work and don't last. Just saying. And this is from listener Brenda.
Well, the 1840s, actually, it's funny you should mention that, was a time of utopianism in America. There was a lot of utopian communities started. They were all sort of inspired by the Shakers. And then there was sort of Robert Owen and Fourier, who were sort of guys that they were sort of industry people themselves. They wanted philanthropists to basically form these phalanxes or little communities made of these massive buildings that everybody could live in and do their laundry together and cook together and do all that stuff.
Wow, I had no idea that people were contemplating like what probably constituted massive buildings back then were probably not quite as big as they are today.
They call them the parallelogram, and the idea was they'd be, for Robert Owen at least, or Fourier it was, it would be a Versailles for the people.
Mm. That is super interesting. As the token crazy communist, I just feel obligated to note that Marx wanted to go beyond co-ops to a stateless classless society. Not just, I mean, co-ops clearly better than having a boss. No offense to any bosses in the room, but you're still competing on the marketplace. So it could coexist with capitalism, which Marx was generally against.
So there you have it, folks. Just another little factoid that you get from listening to the Majority Report. This one, of course, was in the free show, but you should see how many ones were in the fun half. So many factoids. So many funtoids. In the meantime, TMBS this week has been taken over by Literary Hangover, but the Antifada is not taking a vow of silence. Is that right, Jamie?
That is true. We're keeping on, just yelling about communism 24/7. We actually have a lot of stuff this week to promote. So in our free episode, we speak with Anna Merlin, the author of Republic of Lies, American Conspiracy Theorists and Their Surprising Rise to Power, to talk about why conspiracy theories are the most American thing ever, how they got into the White House, and why we will not be a less paranoid society until we are a fairer one. We also... Yeah? You gonna say something? Okay. Nope. We also have History is a Weapon, featuring Sean KB and Matt Chrisman from Chapo Trap House, where they talk about the 70s as a very important decade that prefigured a lot of what's going on in the world right now. And it's a two-parter. So part two will be out next week for our patrons. And this is very exciting. I have an announcement. I started a new show, a new thing. It's currently a side project, although, you know, we'll see how it goes. It is called The Vampire Castle with Leslie Lee from Struggle Session, and it is the only podcast called that where we actually talk about vampires. So check it out.
So wait a second. But there is another podcast called that.
Yeah, another podcast which has appropriated Gothic American culture in a way I really do not appreciate.
Aren't you guys worried about that from a marketing standpoint?
It's like the Two Dope Boys thing all over again.
I mean, right. Which do you think is more popular with the general public? Leftist politics or vampires?
I don't think either are. That's the problem.
Twilight is like the best-selling book of all time.
Oh, that's true, I suppose, yeah.
I can tell you that... when the Minority Report became a movie, not so much as a book, things went severely downhill for me.
Wait, that was after? When was that movie from?
Well, yeah, that movie was probably in the mid-aughts, right?
I thought it was like 2000.
Well, you know what? I have faith.
Well, that's the mid-aughts. Wait a second.
I have faith in the vampire-loving public that this will not happen.
2002.
Shoot. Well, all right.
Right. Oh, and in this first episode, we discussed two vampire westerns, Catherine Bigelow's Near Dark and John Carpenter's Vampires. So check it out.
It was when, what's-his-face, Larry Wilmore almost called a show Minority Report that I started getting a little worried. Matt.
Yeah, like I said.
There's so many literary hangovers out there, but yours is the one that actually talks about books.
I think mine's the only one, actually. And it's the only one that talks about books. And it talks about Margaret Fuller. If you don't know who she is, you should be ashamed, as I was when I figured out what her life and work was. So check out the most recent episode. This weekend, recording a new four members only edition of Orweller, where we talk about George Orwell's essay Such Were the Joys on his time at a preparatory school, and how they sort of beat him for bedwetting, and how he realized that he was there because he was an investment for prestige and scholarship money for the school and not necessarily there for an education. So a lot of interesting things, but it's also very libelous, and he basically lied about a lot of people, so it wasn't published in his lifetime. But that we'll be covering that, we'll be recording this weekend.
It sounds like an app, Orweller.
See you in the fun app. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. you're nervous. You're a little bit upset. You're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2. 5/8. 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Rand Paul.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you. You fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agreed.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up. Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.